Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Hi, Carrie. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'm so excited to chat with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
A little bit about me. Well, I am a writer and I lived outside of Boston, Massachusetts in a lovely suburb. And I have an 11-year-old going on 15-year-old daughter. and I have a lovely dog who is actually on this podcast in the background.
I love that.
I have my third historical novel is coming out called The Paris Bookseller, and I'm really excited to chat with you about that.
So I want to chat about historical novel. Were you a historical fiction reader and that inspired you? Or what was the point of inspiration to start writing historical novels? Because I'm always curious about that.
Yeah, you know, about 10 years ago, I read The Paris Wife by Paula MacLean, which I feel like is one of these real flashpoint novels for a lot of writers of historical fiction. And, you know, it's about Hadley Richardson, Hemingway's first wife, and it was set in Paris in the 20s, you know, not unlike the book that's coming out of mine. And at the time, you know, I read it and I was I was embroiled in the world of young adult fiction. I had no idea of writing an adult historical novel myself, but I was just swept away by The Paris Wife, and I kind of filed it away in my mind under good to know. Like, it's interesting that you know, a writer could take on a subject like this in a historical novel. And then kind of flash forward about 5 years, I stumble on the story of one of John F. Kennedy's younger sisters. Her name was Kathleen Kennedy. She went by the name Kick, and her story was just amazing. And her true real life story was just amazing. And I thought, I just immediately started seeing it in my mind as a novel. And I remembered The Paris Wife, and I thought, well, wow, you know, maybe I too could write a novel like The Paris Wife, but about this woman named Kick Kennedy. And here I am, 3 books later, doing exactly that. So that's the nutshell version.
I love this, like, you know, like a book can inspire you to just, and a person in history can take it to the next level and just like go down the rabbit hole and then create a story that people can actually learn something about.
Yes. You know, readers of historical fiction, I always ask, you know, when their eyes light up and when I tell them that I write historical fiction, they're like, oh gosh, historical fiction is my favorite. And I always say, why? And inevitably they say, it's because I get to learn something at the same time that I get absorbed in a great story. And I always respond, that's exactly why I like to write it. I just toppled over my ring light, but I don't need the ring light. So
it's all good. It's all good. So let's chat about The Paris Bookseller. Tell us a little bit of a pitch.
Yeah. All right. So The Paris Bookseller is the story of Sylvia Beach, the amazing American woman who came to Paris at the end of the First World War and opened the original Shakespeare and Company bookstore in Paris. Mm-hmm. And it was the home of the Lost Generation. All the famous writers that you know, expat writers that you know of from the 1920s, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Gertrude Stein, Ernest Hemingway, Ezra Pound, T.S. Eliot, they all went to Shakespeare and Company and to some extent made it their second home in Paris. She, not only was she a bookstore and lending library, she was a postal service. She was a concierge. She really was the sort of the keys to the kingdom of Paris in the 1920s. And in addition to all that, as if that wasn't enough, she also published the very first edition of James Joyce's novel Ulysses in 1922, following a pretty famous and infamous in some ways trial in, that happened in New York City in 1921 that banned the novel. It convicted the novel of obscenity. And so she, from her perch in Paris, was like, I think this book is very important and still needs to be published and read. And so she published an English language version of it from Paris, and found a way to smuggle it back into the United States alongside the illegal liquor, because of course this was also the 20s, the era of prohibition. So it's a great story.
So what was it like to go down the rabbit hole of researching? You know?
Yeah. So, you know, this was, you know, unlike my previous two novels, I was able to bring almost like a whole adulthood of reading to this novel, because I've always been entranced by the Paris of the 20s and the writing of the 20s. You know, so I had read F. Scott Fitzgerald's novels and Hemingway's novels and Juna Barnes and quite a number of other writers that Sylvia refers to in her own memoir as the crowd. And in fact, so Sylvia Beach wrote her own memoir. It's a very slim little book that I discovered in college when I was a young undergrad obsessed with the writers of the 20s. I found a used copy of her memoir, like in a, you know, those book bins in front of bookstores full of used $1 used books. So I bought her book and I read it, and it was an amazing story. And not unlike The Paris Wife, I kind of filed it away in my mind under good to know. And so I've been carrying her story around with me for more than 20 years. What's actually more amazing to me is that it took me this long to realize that she needed a novel of her own. And so, you know, there were on the subject of the many rabbit holes I could have gone down for this book. There were many, many, many more that I could have. I actually had to be very disciplined in my research for this book, because it's about my book. Almost all the main characters are writers. They have written whole bodies of work on their own. And then there are letters of theirs that have been published, biographies, in some cases, autobiographies. I could have spent decades just researching these people. So I had to kind of figure out what felt like the right amount of research so that I could go forth and write my own novel in a responsible way that would be authentic and well-researched and historically accurate, but where I could also, you know, fill in some gaps with my imagination and create a, you know, a compelling novel for people to read now. So
I love this. Yeah. And so what was the process of writing during the pandemic? Was it any easier, any harder, you know?
You know, I talk a little bit about this in my author's note in the novel, but so I did, I actually wrote and wrote most of the first draft and certainly revised all of it during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot I could say about juggling, you know, having a kid who was, you know, at home doing school from home. And I was not like homeschooling her per se. She was doing remote school for her public school classes. And like for most parents, you know, working parents that I know, it was much harder at the beginning, you know, when the pandemic originally hit and we went into all of our first lockdowns and no one knew what was going on or what anyone was doing. Mm-hmm. You know, I worked more slowly. And it got much better, you know, it got much better as time went on. So I was able to continue writing even with my daughter home significantly more than she was normally. But, you know, I think one of the amazing and wonderful things about the pandemic for this particular book was the fact that I was writing about this world famous and world changing independent bookstore at the same time that independent bookstores all over the world and our country were changing book selling because of the pandemic. And so I had this like enormous affection. I mean, I've always had affection for independent bookstores. I worked in an independent bookstore when I first graduated from college and I was writing my very first novel. So I've always, you know, and obviously I have a fondness for Shakespeare and Company. I saw, you know, booksellers all over rise to the occasion of this pandemic and figure out ways of putting their book selling online, their events online, their book clubs online, and really transforming the whole landscape of books and book selling, you know, this 100 years after my book takes place. So that was really kind of inspiring in the background for me as I was writing this book.
I like the parallel in some ways. It's like a shifting, you know, the shift that happens, you know, 100 years later,
you know. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that was another funny thing, sort of like not related to books and book selling, but like there's in my novel, no spoilers, this isn't a big spoiler. There's an interesting way in which the post office gets used in my novel as an instrument of censorship. And there we were 100 years later with the post office getting blamed for you know, election problems. And I just thought to myself, gosh, the poor post office, you know, they were just designed to deliver the mail.
Yeah.
but that was another sort of funny, like never would have predicted kind of resonance with what was happening 100 years ago that I was writing about in my novel, that I was living through this sort of like latter day post office crisis.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I just realized, I was like, yeah, the post office, it feels like 2020, 21 are like one continuous year. And I don't like, I have like no sense of time or what happened a year ago, because they're all the same, it all mixed together, and I forgot that we had the elections, like,
you know? It's really, really true. I mean, I remember, you remember at the end of 2020 when like all like the, you know, all of the like the dumpster fire memes and like, yeah, we're finally getting rid of 2020 and 2021 was gonna have to be better, and surely it has been better. Vaccine,
yeah,
certainly it's better, but to your point, there's been a lot of bleed.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what the end of 2021 kind of like meme become.
Yeah. We'll see. By the time this airs, we'll know what new meme.
That's true.
All right. So let's chat book recommendations. Do you have any books that you recommend our listeners to pick up?
Yeah, so I took a little bit of a different angle on this question, which I hope will be fun. I am a huge audiobook listener.
Yes.
My dog took down my ring light earlier. And so I walk my dog a lot. And I try, once I realized at some point that I could use this as an opportunity to read. And I, to those listeners out there who are wondering, is audiobook listening really reading?
Yes.
Is 100%. I endorse audiobook listening completely. And so, by the way, does Stephen King. He wrote a wonderful book on writing in which he talks about being a devoted audiobook listener. So I thought I would talk about a few of my favorite recent audiobooks and that are, I think, I did not read them with my eyeballs, but I know that they would be just as good if you were to read them with your eyeballs as opposed to your ears. But I think that they were kind of especially good audiobooks. So I'm going to start with one by Stephen Rowley called The Gunkle. Mm-hmm. It came out this summer, and it is just like a charming and poignant story of a gay uncle, hence the gunkle. I have a gunkle of my own, as a side note, who winds up spending the summer with his two, his niece and nephew, his brother's children, following a kind of a double-barreled family tragedy. No spoilers. But I think one of the things that made The Gunkle as an audiobook especially great is the fact that Stephen, the author, read it.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And I have to admit, I know Stephen. Stephen and I have been on a few panels together recently because a previous novel of each of ours involved the Kennedys. He wrote a novel called The Editor that was about Jackie Kennedy was one of the main characters. And I, as I was talking about earlier, I wrote about Kick Kennedy. So he and I kind of got to know each other through our Kennedy connection. And I was so excited when The Gunkle came out, it just looked fabulous. And so I listened to it and I just absolutely fell in love with it. And he reads it and he just does a remarkable job. And, you know, I feel like I'm a pretty jaded audiobook listener at this point. Like really the reader really makes a big difference in your enjoyment of the audiobook. And so I was worried. I was like, oh, an author reading it, but he just like absolutely hit it out of the park. I mean, it's absolutely terrific. And I feel also like the fact that he was the author reading it, it lent a certain authority to the audiobook. It's, you know, he got to read it with his own intention in the inflections and in the exclamations and all of that. So I thought it was really, really, really well done. I see you nodding. I others of us can't see, we can see each other, but like, have you also read The Gunkle?
The Gunkle has been mentioned so many times because it deals with grief and it deals with like just this, you know, setting. And I'm like, now you mentioned there's an author reading the book. And I'm like, I just need to check my library has it. If not, I'll buy it, you know, yeah. Because yeah. It's going to be my next book, like tonight, you know?
Yeah, it's really great. And as we're entering colder months, mm-hmm. It's set in Palm Springs in the summer. So yeah. It's all sparkling pools and like caftans, and it's a great winter escape kind of novel too. So I endorse it on that level also.
Yes.
Okay. So another terrific book that was also just a special audio book is Daisy Jones and the Six.
Yes.
By Tara Jenkins. Have you listened to it? Yeah. I was
a full cost audio, and I read it like a couple of times, and yep. Just it's getting better and better, you know.
Yeah, I believe it. And I they're making it into a movie and I can't wait to see the movie. I mean, it's a great novel, right? It's a great story, you know, so compelling with all the different characters coming together to tell the story and like responding to each other in interesting ways in the way in which the story of this band from the 70s is like pieced together. And there's like a kind of a central mystery to it. And it's just such a page turner. But as you said, the full cast recording, which has, you know, Jennifer Beale and Benjamin Bratt and, a handful of other really just amazing actors and readers, it just makes it a special, special audiobook. So I love that one.
Yes, that's great.
Yeah. And then, you know, another one that I thought was a great audiobook was Born a Crime by Trevor Noah, which is a memoir that he himself, this is another one, he wrote the book and he did the audio recording. But I guess this one's a little less surprising than the fact that Stephen Rowley read his own, because I don't think of Stephen as an actor, but like, obviously, you know, Trevor Noah is an entertainer. But again, I mean, he's a gifted entertainer. And I'm not a big late night television watcher, so I barely heard of him before I listened to his audiobook. And so I, talk about a book where you learn a lot while getting like swept up in an amazing, like in his case, true story. Mm-hmm. He's from South Africa. I learned so much about South Africa and apartheid and the effects of it, you know, on many generations of people living there. It was really a remarkable book. And on top of all of that, it was so moving. And the fact that he's an entertainer, you know, he's able to kind of pair humor and tragedy in the book in a really unique and effective way. And the way he reads it just builds on that. you know, mm-hmm. it's very exciting. I hadn't actually planned on mentioning this one, but as another memoir that was a great audiobook, but not read by the author, is Educated.
Yeah.
Did you listen to that one?
I read it. It was so good. Yeah.
So good. Such a, like, really a tough read, right? Yeah. Like, tough, like, really hard subject. Some intense violence and personal, you know, deep personal inquiry. But it is not read by the author. It is read by Julia Whalen, who is a great audiobook reader. And in fact, she won multiple awards for her reading of that memoir. So that's sort of an interesting, I listened to that not long after Born a Crime. And that was an interesting sort of contrast for me, like, you know, two memoirs, one read by the author and the other read by someone else, but both equally effective.
That's, I gotta say, for audiobooks, memoirs do really well because you get just be immersed with someone's story and someone's life. And sometimes it's like, it's a good way to just, if you're new to audiobooks, memoirs, nonfiction is a good start, and then you build into fiction, you know?
Yeah. What are some of your favorite memoir audiobooks?
So I like celebrity memoirs. I have to admit, like, any juicy Hollywood kind of like tell all, you're trying to figure out who this person is. I have to tell you, they're a delight just to do, especially comedians. Like, you get a sense of like who they are beyond just the stuff they're sharing. Sure. So I did like Casey Wilson's The Wreckage of My Past. I listened to that one recently and it was really good. Like, I can't identify with certain parts, and I was like, oh, you're just like us, you know, celebrity. Yeah. Tiffany Haddish, The Last Black Unicorn is hilarious.
These are great titles.
Yeah. So she basically, there's a story about Will and Jada Smith, how she bought a Groupon. And so they join her with a Groupon. Like, she says, just like us. Mm-hmm. And she go for a swamp thing. They were like, they didn't know what a Groupon was. She's like, a Groupon. Like, she's like, they're so rich, they don't know what a Groupon is.
Yeah.
So that was delightful. And then just like, I would say Mindy Kaling's, I think she has a couple of short stories, but Jessica Simpson actually has a really good memoir.
I've heard this about hers. That it's really supposed to be terrific. Have you read the Chelsea Handler one?
Yes. I read Chelsea Handler's most of them. Most of her books are funny. They're definitely irreverent and they're funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you listen to that one or did you read it?
I think I read Chelsea Handler's. I read it. I listened to Jessica. I listened to Tiffany and I listened to Casey.
Do they read their own?
Huh?
Do they read their own?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I'm like I started audiobooks actually about a couple years ago. So it was like a slow introduction to them. And I'm like, that's where I started. And then I just dive into now listening to some fiction and some like just romance or historical fiction and some thrillers. Thrillers do work really well for me in audio.
Which one? I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Thrillers do work really well with me for audio.
What's one of your favorites?
The Golden Couple is coming out in March. It's Greer Hendricks and Sarah Pekkanen. They wrote Anonymous Girl and The Wife Between Us. And that was actually like, they're kind of like suspense. They're kind of like women's fiction meets thriller, like mystery suspense. That was a good one. The Last Mrs. Parrish by Liv Constantine, which is another one, women's fiction meets mystery thriller, you know?
Yeah. So what about, did you listen to Janelle Brown's Pretty Things? That was also a very good audiobook.
No, but I need to. I'll
throw that in as a bonus.
Yeah. So, and then I just borrowed the last thing he saved, Lord Dave's new mystery thriller.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
So I just borrowed that one. So that's like my, after the long call, that's going to be my next one. So
These are great suggestions. I always like getting suggestions. In fact, I'll be honest, like Daisy Jones and the Six and Born a Crime were two audiobooks that were recommended to me by another historical novelist friend named Elise Hooper, who also listens to a lot of audiobooks. And she was like, these are really, like, if you're going to listen to them, it's almost better to listen to them than to read them, because they're so well read.
Yeah.
So I'll offer one, or if I have time, two more. So this one is one, it's like, it's historical fiction. It's also definitely literary fiction. And I sometimes worry about literary, capital L, capital F, fiction, that it might feel slower in audiobook. Although I have no actual evidence of that. But Hamnet by Maggie O'Farrell, which is, very loosely based on the life of Shakespeare's wife and children. Mm. And it is, it's a fabulous book, and it is so beautifully written and beautifully, beautifully read. In fact, I actually don't know off the top of my head the name of the audiobook listener, but the reader, let me just read her. So her name was L. Potter is the name of the reader. She's British, and she just has the most lovely accent that she reads the book in. And she does voices, and they're subtle. And it's just, I listened to it in like the dead of winter last winter, walking my dog, like on the ice. Mm-hmm. And it was so great. I mean, the lyricism of Maggie O'Farrell's prose really beautifully comes across in the way it's read. And I think, it was great. It was a great audiobook. Another one, this is my last one that I thought was a terrific audiobook, but it was sort of, a high risk audiobook. I mean, obviously it was going to be made into an audiobook, which was Eleanor Oliphant Is Completely Fine.
Yeah.
Have you read that one?
I read the book. I did not listen to it. So tell me about the audiobook.
Yeah. So because the book is so voicey. Right. And first person, it's this deep, deep, deep dive into the psychology of Eleanor Oliphant. Right. And so, as I was listening to it, I found, and it was great. It was a great audiobook. Like, the reader seemed, I don't know what else the reader has done. This is another one where I had to, remind myself, of the audiobook reader. Kathleen McCarran is the name of the reader, and the author's name is Gail Honeyman. And so I found myself wondering, I wonder what the author thought of this audio recording, because again, the novel is so voice driven. It's so much about who Eleanor is. Like, if she wasn't thrilled with the audiobook reader. And it was funny, I was talking to a friend of mine who's a big reader who had just read it and had gone to an event. This is before the pandemic, gone to an event with the author, and someone asked her this very question: what did you think of the audiobook reader? And Gail Honeyman said, she's great. It was a ringing endorsement. Yeah. And I thought to myself, well, phew for both of them. Right. Yeah. I felt like that was one where I really felt like my listening to the book was truly an authentic reading, right? Even the author felt that the reader really embodied this character that she had invented, which I think is not an easy thing. And it would be easy for a writer to feel really protective of a character like Eleanor Oliphant, right? Like she's so specific.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Those are my recommendations that I think are great novels that if you want to read them in, you know, with your eyeballs, or if you want, but if you want to listen to them, I think that they're especially kind of magical audiobooks.
I love this. And I love audiobook recommendations, especially for podcast listeners, because it's a great bridge, you know, to get your reading done while listening to an audiobook. So
yes, 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 for sure. I actually didn't think about that, but 100%. Yeah. We're all out there listening, you know, as we're walking dogs or folding laundry or making dinner or, you know, whatever. Like, there are so many times. What are some of your favorite times to like listen to audiobooks?
At work. So I work from home and I have a lot of tasks that are just like, you just have to data or do this or do that. And I'm like, I just put an audiobook and I just get lost in the story. It's like my favorite way to just, you know, get work done and just get to focus. Yeah. So, and you just walk your dog and do all the other stuff.
I do all the other stuff. Yeah. I mean, like, again, anything that doesn't require too much of my brain, I like to have an audiobook on in the background. And I do listen to some podcasts. You know, there are so many wonderful podcasts. and just like there are so many wonderful audiobooks, but yeah. I am a very slow reader. Like, I'm eyeball reader. So I really, once I realized that audiobooks were kind of a thing that I could do to increase the amount of reading that I did, I really seized on it. I started listening to audiobooks. I feel like we're living through a real golden age of like audiobooks right now. Like they've become so popular. I think partly because of podcasts. You know, people are just listening all the time now. But I started listening to audiobooks like 15 years ago when I had an hour long commute each way in my car to get to my teaching position. I taught writing, and my local library had a terrific collection of, you know, we called them books on tape. And so I thought they were actually books on CD for the most part. So I would check out, you know, books and listen to them on my car stereo during my commute. And it was the best way to pass that commute time. Yeah. I listened to a little bit of news just so I sort of knew what was going on in the world. Like 20 minutes of NPR and then 40 minutes of, I'll never forget listening to Caleb Carr's The Alienist. That was one of my favorites. That was a doorstop of a book. You know, yeah. I've actually gotten through some very long books on audio that I probably would have shied away from, to be totally honest, like reading. Because I'm so slow.
Yeah. That's amazing. And honestly, and books on tape at that time, you couldn't speed it up or anything. So you really had to just slow it down. So that's amazing.
You sometimes increase the speed.
I do. I increase the speed. Yeah.
Me too. But not too much. I rarely go above 1.2 because after 1.2, I find that it starts really sounding funny, like the Smurfs.
I'm a 2.0, so, but I cannot go past it because it's the same thing. It just sounds like shrink, like little, I don't know, like it just sounds like a little squirrel. So. Awesome. Well, tell us where we can find you online.
Oh, okay. Well, so my favorite place to be online is Instagram. Mm-hmm. I'm very active on Instagram. I am also on Facebook. On Facebook and Instagram, my handle is the same. It's Carrie Mayer Writer. So KerriMaherWriter. Wow, that was a mouthful. But Carrie Mayer Writer on Facebook and Instagram. I also have a website, carriemayer.com. And I have a newsletter that you can subscribe to through my website and the contact link. And so those are all great ways to connect with me. And I love connecting with people and readers. It's like my favorite, like, it's so cool when readers like reach out and like, you know, say something about the book or take a picture of themselves reading the book or respond to something that I've posted about research that I'm doing or whatever. I think that that's, you know, writing, I feel like writers say this all the time, but you can never say it enough. It's like, it's a lonely thing. There's no water cooler. And so social media really is like the water cooler, you know, we get to interact with, you know, the people who love it like we love it.
Yeah, that is very true. So thank you, Carrie, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun chatting with you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. Today's episode's partner is Libre FM. If you're an audiobook listener, then you should add Libre FM as your go-to source for paid audiobooks. Libre FM makes it possible for you to buy audiobooks through your local bookstore. Memberships start at $14.95, and they also have great sales for romance audiobooks each month for $3.99, thanks to the Kiss Club. To sign up for Libre FM, please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/LibreFM. You will receive a free audiobook when you sign up for a monthly subscription. If you purchase a subscription through our link, you will be supporting the podcast at no cost to you. The What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Please visit frolic.media/podcast to discover new shows to tune in. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day. Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.